Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Women working low-wage jobs, janitors, domestic workers, farm workers, hotel workers, have been organizing for decades. And now they are getting attention in the national media and the national conversation about Me Too. The question that we've been asking on this show and will continue to ask is, what will actually change? What will change for women who have no choice but to stay in an abusive workplace because they cannot afford to leave their jobs? What will change for women who often work in isolation? What will change for women immigrants who can't speak out for fear of deportation? After a group of female janitors went on a hunger strike outside of the California Capitol in September, Governor Jerry Brown signed legislation that requires supervisors to complete sexual harassment training every 2 years, beginning in 2019. Other protections secured overtime pay for domestic workers and held companies accountable when contracting companies they hire withhold payment. What will it take to bring systemic changes to these workplaces? Today, we are continuing our Me Too series with three guests. Sasha Coca is a journalist and host of KQED's The California Report magazine. In 2015 and 2016, Sasha worked on Rape in the Fields and Rape on the Night Shift, collaborative investigations by PBS, Reveal, and KQED about the sexual assault of women janitors and women farm workers. And Sasha has been reporting on these issues for many years, and she joins me in studio. Hi, Sasha. Thank you for coming
in. Hi there. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Monica Ramirez, co-founder and president of the National Farm Workers Alliance, a national alliance of women farm workers, and they also work with the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. Monica comes from a family of farm workers and is now an attorney and an advocate. The National Farm Workers wrote a letter to Women in Hollywood expressing solidarity, and then Women in Hollywood wrote back. Hi, Monica. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. And Linda Burnham is a senior advisor at the National Domestic Workers Alliance, where she researches the working conditions of house cleaners, nannies, and elder caregivers. Linda is co-author of the report Home Economics, The Indivisible and Underregulated World of Domestic Work. Linda is currently working on a book about domestic worker organizing. Hi, Linda. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having us on.
Well, it's great to have all of you on. When we do a show about low-wage workers and Me Too, I think it's so important to emphasize the fact that janitors, domestic workers, farm workers have been organizing for a very, very long time. You know, none of this is new. And Linda, I'm just wondering, as someone who's been involved in this movement for a very long time, how are you reflecting right now on what we're seeing?
Well, when you say domestic workers and farm workers have been organizing for a very long time, that is so true. And the current domestic worker movement is only really the latest iteration of a movement that goes back at least into the 19th century. So women have been organizing about their working conditions, domestic workers in particular here. And when we speak about domestic workers, we're talking about people who do house cleaning, people who take care of children and elders in private homes. So that organizing has been going on for a very long time, and in that time, we have learned a lot about conditions on the job, including the kinds and forms of sexual harassment and sexual assault that workers face. This moment is really important because it is an intersection between the heightened consciousness on the part of, you know, everybody who's paying attention in the country as a whole to a long-term and entrenched phenomena in the workplace that intersects with the organizing that we've been doing in lifting up the voices of domestic workers. So it's a really important and full of potential moment for us in the work.
And what would you add to that, Monica, co-founder and president of the National Farm Workers Alliance? I mean, the farm workers have been organizing for decades. How are you reflecting on this moment?
Well, you know, so I think, you know, for us, because we have been doing work on this issue, specifically on this issue for so long, I think that in part we feel like we are in a position, because of the years of experience that we have, to offer some of our guidance as well as some of our tools to those new groups that perhaps are just starting to organize around this issue, because we do have a lot of experience. And I think that perhaps one of the areas in which we've spent the most time over the years is really determining how we can best support survivors when they do come forward. And I think that, you know, when we sent the letter that was published in Time Magazine on November 10th, you know, the objective of that letter was really to send a clear message to the survivors who are coming forward in the entertainment industry to let them know that they were not alone and that we stood with them. And I think that that message is a very powerful one, and it's one that we have reiterated within our own community over and over again in different parts of the country. And I think that that is one that is really helping to support others as they're looking at this issue and coming forward. And I think for us now, it's a matter of, you know, since people are paying attention, not just cross-sector, but, you know, even at different levels of government, how do we take what we have learned over the decades that we've been working on this to really make the best of the situation in terms of positive long-term change, not just for farm worker women, but for all workers?
You mentioned the letter, and this is getting so much media attention. The letter in Time Magazine, just to quote a bit of it, says, "Dear sisters, we write on behalf of the approximately 700,000 women who work in the agricultural fields and packaging sheds across the United States. For the past several weeks, we've watched and listened with sadness as we have learned of the actors, models, and other individuals who've come forward to speak out about gender-based violence. We wish that we could say we're shocked to learn that this is such a pervasive problem in your industry. Sadly, we're not surprised, because it's a reality we know far too well. Countless farm worker women across our country suffer in silence because of the widespread sexual harassment and assault that they face at work." Monica, can you give us a little bit of background about how you all decided to write this letter, and what was the reasoning behind it?
Sure. So, you know, as was stated in the letter, we were following what was happening on the news and started having conversations among ourselves, you know, with our members, and felt strongly that we wanted to say or do something to show our solidarity with the individuals in the entertainment industry, just like we've done with other groups of workers as they've come forward over the years, because we feel we know what it's like to be alone, we know what it's like not to be believed, and we know what it's like to have people who are trying to intimidate us and keep us quiet. And so when we started hearing what was happening, we felt like we needed to do or say something. And it was around that same time that we learned about the march that was going to be happening in Hollywood, the Take Back the Workplace march that took place on November 12th. And so we made the decision, after lots of conversations with our members, that some of our members who were organized by Líderes Campesinas, one of our founding member organizations that is based in California, they decided that they would organize women in California and they would join the march on the 12th. And in conjunction with that, we would issue our statement. And so 30 of our members and members of Líderes Campesinas marched on November 12th in solidarity with the women in the entertainment industry, and the others would come forward. And then our letter was read from the main stage. And, you know, we had no expectation of any kind of response. We just wanted to send the message that we understood how difficult it must be for them to speak out, because, you know, for farm worker women, it's extremely challenging to speak out about sexual violence against them, because farm worker women live in the shadows, and they're paralyzed by the fact that they live in the shadows and are made to feel like they have no voice. And we saw that women who were in the entertainment industry and the others who were coming forward, that they faced a similar type of paralysis, but for them it was for the exact opposite reason, and that was because they were in the spotlight. And we just wanted to say, we understand, we stand with you, and please know that we believe you, because those are things that farm worker women often do not hear, and we didn't want that to happen to anyone else.
After the letter from farm workers to Hollywood was published, Hollywood wrote back to farm workers in a full-page ad in the New York Times, and a number of women in Hollywood and others have also started a Time's Up movement. According to reports, this fund has raised $16 million so far, and it's meant to provide legal resources and various services to women facing workplace harassment or abuse across industries. And Monica, you were one of the advocates and activists who went to the Golden Globe Awards. You went with Laura Dern. Talk a little bit about that experience and how you think the increased spotlight on farm workers, for example, will have an impact.
Sure. Well, you know, I have a couple of thoughts on that. First, I want to, you know, recognize that my sister, Aijin Fu, director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, was there as well. And we had the great opportunity of lifting up the issues that confront farm worker women as well as domestic workers. And I think that, you know, what people at home might not realize is that the decision to attend that event and to hold a social action, which is what we did, that was not the result of a conversation or two or, you know, just a phone call to come to this wonderful event. But, you know, we, from Alianza, the National Farm Worker Women's Alliance, we had been working in coordination and partnership with the women in the entertainment industry with Time's Up since November, since our letter was published, basically, and had a great opportunity to work with them to think about what the next steps could look like. And they've been very gracious all along the way and recognizing the fact that we have a lot of experience on this issue and that they would like to learn from us. And just like they said the same, they said that to us, working with the farm worker women, similarly, they said the same to Aijin and to the other activists who were there. And so this was not a situation that just arose from one night to the next and we showed up and we went to this event. It was the result of several weeks and, in our case, a couple of months of working together. And in terms of what it means for lifting up the issues related to farm worker women and other women who might not have had the opportunity to have their experiences highlighted in the media, I mean, you know, it was very important to us to send a clear message that women in Hollywood, they too are women workers. This is a workers' rights issue, and farm worker women as workers stand with them, and we hope to support them, just as we hope that this initiative, and we know that this initiative is much broader than just one industry, because they've made clear in the way that they have created Time's Up that it would extend beyond their industry and into and across other sectors. And so this is a very exciting moment. It's historic. I don't think we've ever seen the different sectors coming together in the way that we're seeing right now. And I think that by joining forces at the Golden Globes, where we had really an international platform, it gave us a chance to talk about our communities that perhaps had not been on the forefront of many people's minds in this nation or around the world. And, you know, some have said to me, farm worker women don't have a voice. And the reality is, farm worker women, just like domestic workers, just like restaurant workers and hotel workers and others, we have a voice. Mm-hmm. It's just we've never been given the megaphone. Yeah. And this was an opportunity to provide us with a megaphone to talk about what we're experiencing, but I think most importantly to talk about what we're doing to end the problem.
Right. Linda, what would you add to that? It's such a good point about talking about who has a voice and who has the microphone.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is exactly what's significant about this moment. The organizing that the farm worker women have been doing and that domestic workers have been doing has been exactly about lifting up the voices and the stories and the narratives and the insights of the women who do the work. So the whole intention of the work is to bring people into their power by recognizing the dignity of the work, the need for safety on the work, in the work and in the workplace, and to provide women through organizing with the space to step into their power. And so that's the whole intention behind the ongoing organizing. So you see the Golden Globes and you see the glitz and glamour. The day-to-day organizing is not about glitz and glamour. So you can see Monica and Aijin stepping into a moment where that all of that is lifted up, the work that's been going on for decades. And I think that piece about voice, you know, one of the things that I think has been kind of astonishing about this moment is that people who you think could or should have power, i.e., you know, people with a whole bunch of money in Hollywood, big name, front covers of magazines, et cetera, don't feel powerful in the face of assault and oppression and male supremacy and patriarchy, it silences women. And that's been a phenomena for generations and millennia. And the power of this moment is that people are prepared to say, this is our reality, but time's up.
Right.
Something has to change, and it has to change across sectors. So I think the fact that the farm worker women took that amazing initiative, the fact that the women in Hollywood were open to welcoming that initiative is a really important moment. And, of course, the question for all of us is, how do we sustain momentum and turn the momentum into change? Mm.
That is Linda Burnham, Senior Advisor at the National Domestic Workers Alliance. We're also joined by Monica Ramirez, co-founder and president of the National Farm Workers Alliance, and Sasha Coca, a journalist and host of KQED's The California Report magazine. Sasha, when Me Too started to explode, some of the first things I thought about were the class action lawsuit filed by women at Walmart. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how long ago it was, 8 years maybe?
At least.
And then the documentaries that you worked on and did radio documentaries on, Rape in the Fields and Rape on the Night Shift. You've been covering farm workers for many, many years. And I think that Monica and Linda make such a good point about this whole kind of idea that these women don't have a voice and now they're finally getting one with Me Too. I mean, it's just such a bad and a wrong frame.
That's right. I mean, it is true that they haven't had the megaphone, as Monica says, but there has been organizing around this issue. There have been women who have been vocal and bravely so about what has happened to them, both in the fields and in the janitorial industry, where women working alone at night in isolation have been sexually assaulted on the job in a number of cases. And, you know, I think this is a very powerful moment. You know, we've gone back and checked back in with the women that we talked to for Rape on the Night Shift to ask them, you know, how are you feeling in this moment now? And I think there's a real mixture of pride that they came forward and told their stories well before Me Too and organized around this issue well before Me Too. But also, you know, a little bit of maybe anger and sadness that when they spoke up, you know, who listened, and the risks that they've had to take in order to speak up when their jobs could be on the line, when their ability to feed their families could be on the line, and when, you know, oftentimes the harasser or the alleged perpetrator is their supervisor, you know, controls whether they get a paycheck. But we've also seen some incredibly empowering organizing that's happened since we first made these documentaries. In the case of the janitors, it's been amazing to check back in with them and see here in California the incredible efforts that women have made to fight back, not only with the hunger strike you mentioned to get the bill by Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez passed, but also the organizing that's happening where women are taking control of their conditions in the workplace themselves. So I've had the opportunity to sit in on some of these incredible self-defense classes in Los Angeles where janitors are actually learning to use their bodies as weapons if they need to defend themselves. And the idea is to kind of create an army of female janitors where they would take these self-defense classes to the buildings, to women on their breaks, whether it's the middle of the night, you know, that they're getting their break and they can do it in the parking lot or whatever, figure out how they have the power to protect themselves on the job. You know, we've been following a number of janitors over the years. I think of one woman, Georgina Hernandez, who was raped. She cleaned a lobby of a hotel. She was raped multiple times by her supervisor. It took us months to get her to feel comfortable talking on camera, telling her story on the radio. She was very reluctant. She couldn't even utter the words sexual harassment. And, you know, a month or so ago, I got to see her lead a self-defense class and go up to this dummy, you know, these imposing dummies with red T-shirts. They're like these mannequins that they're learning to do self-defense with. And, you know, poke this mannequin in the eye and just go, I feel great. You know, I feel so powerful.
Wow. I would love to get them on the show. You know, you bring up some good points because a couple days ago we were talking a lot about race and class. And when you specifically focus on class, studies show that the lower the wages, the more sexual assault. And the restaurant industry is getting a lot of attention because women who work at some of these fast food joints in places like Red Lobster or Applebee's, especially in states where the wage is still around $2 an hour, they have to rely on tips. And so they're often told to wear shorter skirts or have your cleavage hanging out to bring the tips home. It's so important to emphasize that for so many women, they cannot leave these jobs,
right? That's
right. A lot of people say, well, just leave and go find another job. And we'll talk about this later, but they don't have a boss with a household name where they can point to this guy and say, Charlie Rose, you did this to me, and you're out of here, right? They don't have that kind of situation. So can you talk specifically right now just about how low wages affect these women?
Well, of course, when you've got to feed your family and when your paycheck is what's doing that, and when the perpetrator or the harasser is the person who controls whether you get that paycheck, then there's a lot at stake.
Right.
And now, especially in this climate, when there's a real fear of deportation and there's a real vulnerability among undocumented workers, moms who are trying to feed their families and harassers can use that as leverage, I think there's a real vulnerability that we're seeing. But despite that, there's a real courage and power in these women coming forward and telling their stories. When we first did our documentaries, many of these women had not told their partners, their husbands, their children, what had happened. And they, after many months of talking with us, decided that they wanted to take the microphone and tell those stories on national television, on Frontline, and on radio, on Reveal, and on the California Report. And, it was a real risk for them, but I think they decided to do it because they wanted to give other women the courage to step forward and to stand up. And in fact, that's what's happened. When we've showed the film, which was in English and Spanish, we had that commitment to produce it both with Univision and Frontline. Women would just stand up after the screenings and start saying what happened to them. And it was just sort of like this chain reaction. And we didn't anticipate it at all. But it's really led to, I think, a validation for the women who chose to participate that, in fact, their stories did have impact.
Monica, in the case of farm workers and rape in the fields, many of the farm workers told their stories for the first time. In many cases, they had on bandanas so you couldn't see their full face, and that was a very brave act. Before we let you go, and I know you have to go soon, where does this go from here? Are you in talks about what's next? What's next with the fund? And as Linda said, the key question is how do organizers and how will this movement be sustained?
Mm-hmm. Yes, first I want to thank Sasha because our members, myself and our members, were involved in some of the background interviews for Rape in the Fields, and we're appreciative that effort did take place and that documentary did come out because it was one of the first major ways in which the issue confronting farm worker women did come to light. And so we're grateful to that, as we are to this show, for highlighting this issue. For us, this is a continuation of our work. And we will continue to look at the policy and advocacy changes that are required in order to ensure that all farm workers and all workers are safe in the workplace and can work with dignity. And that's going to require both policy changes at the federal level as well as the state, not to mention some administrative changes. And we've been working on those issues for a long time, and so we'll continue to do that. The difference is now we have other partners that we can work with on this. And so certainly in collaboration with Time's Up and with National Domestic Workers Alliance and others, we're all going to be thinking very carefully about what is next. And, farm workers and domestic workers, we're among the most vulnerable workers in the country because we are excluded from many protections. And so I think that it's important for us to remember that solving this problem or ameliorating this problem, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. We need to be thinking about the various industries in which this problem exists and the various dynamics that are present for the workers in those communities so that we can make sure that when we are making proposals about the changes that are required through legislation or otherwise, that they are going to reach the margins and bring people up from the margins inward into safety and in towards justice. And, you know, the other thing is that I think that what's significant about the Golden Globes is that by putting it on national TV and internationally, people were viewing this, that was a culture shift movement moment. So policy is one thing. Advocacy is another, because in the case of farm workers, if our members cannot access the law because they cannot get to the agency where they have to make the complaint, where they then pursue their case, if they cannot access the law, then the law is not good enough. But it's not going to be the law alone that's going to change the problem. We have to have culture shifts so that bystanders feel they can come forward to speak out when they see something. We have to have a situation in which people realize that the behaviors that are considered part of sexual harassment, the whole full range of behaviors, are not acceptable, and there will be action taken against them. And that doesn't happen through law and policy alone. That happens through behavior change. And I think that having, you know, a room full of people, very high-profile people standing together wearing black, showing that they are not going to take this any longer, send a very clear message to the audience all over the world. And I think that that marked a culture shift moment, and we need to continue that culture shift piece because it's equally as important as the policy and advocacy, in my opinion, and right. We're going to keep working on those things.
Well, Monica, thank you so much for joining us, and we would love to have you back. We have extensively covered farm workers and these related issues, and we will continue to do so. So thank you so much for your work, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Monica Ramirez is co-founder and president of the National Farm Workers Alliance, a national alliance of women farm workers. They also work with the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. Monica comes from a family of farm workers and is now an attorney and an advocate. And coming up after the break, we will continue our conversation about low-wage workers who've been organizing for decades. We're talking about this moment, this cultural shift, and how it will affect them with Linda Burnham, senior advisor at the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and Sasha Coca, a journalist and the host of KQED's The California Report magazine. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Jake Bernstein about his new book, Secrecy World, Inside the Panama Papers Investigation of Illicit Money Networks and the Global Elite. An estimated 8% of the world's household financial wealth is held in offshore tax havens. They allow the super rich and corporations to hide their money and avoid paying taxes. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. Today, we are continuing our Me Too series by talking about women working in low-wage jobs, janitors, domestic workers, farm workers, hotel workers. They have been organizing for decades, and we're talking about how the Me Too movement will affect them. And if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. If you are a domestic worker, a hotel worker, really even a blue-collar worker, the New York Times had this incredible story about what happens at the Ford factory in Chicago. Now, these women have the protections of a very powerful union, and they still face rampant sexual harassment and racism. So if you have any personal stories, comments, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Leave a comment on our website or tweet at Your Call Radio. Linda Burnham is a senior advisor at the National Domestic Workers Alliance, where she researches the working conditions of house cleaners, nannies, and elder caregivers. Sasha Coca is a journalist and host of KQED's The California Report magazine. She did extensive work on rape in the fields and rape on the night shift, collaborative investigations by PBS, Reveal, and KQED. Rape on the Night Shift will be airing with updates this Tuesday on Frontline at 7 p.m. And then next week, there will be documentaries on KQED and Reveal. Sasha, what was it like for you to check in with the janitors after this documentary aired and after the hunger strike happened and after California Governor Jerry Brown signed legislation that requires supervisors to complete sexual harassment training every 2 years?
You know, it was really incredible. I think the last couple of years have actually been an incredible journey since the project came out in 2015 to see how it really was impact journalism that kind of mobilized some organizing. Usually it doesn't work like that. Usually we journalists are reporting on the organizing. But in this case, you know, the fact that janitors working in isolation are sexually assaulted and harassed on the job, I think was sort of something that wasn't talked about much. Even within the janitors union here in California, there's been a real cultural shift. I think it took a lot of soul searching for the janitors union to screen our film and to have women stand up afterwards and tell their stories, and for the janitors union to say, hey, we've really got to take this on. We've talked with David Huerta, president of the janitors union, and he talks about this moment where, you know, some of these women were standing up saying, hey, we need to make this a strike priority. We need to incorporate this into our union contracts. And there was a low murmur in the audience, and the woman who was bringing this up was getting booed by some of the men in the audience. Wow. And David Huerta stood up and said, ya basta. Enough is enough. Don't tell me that this doesn't happen to your sisters, your mothers, that you would want this to happen to the women in your life. And don't tell me that you're not a part of this, that you haven't seen this happen. So I think it's taken a real cultural shift. I think it's important to talk about the men in all of this, too, because these are the coworkers. These are the people who can be witnesses. These are the people who can be allies. And so within the janitors union, not only has there been this incredible transformation, they actually took those words, ya basta, enough is enough, and created a campaign where women wore t-shirts saying ya basta, pushed for this bill, held a hunger strike in front of the Capitol, put duct tape over their mouths to symbolize the silence that they had felt. They couldn't speak out. They put billboards up here in the Bay Area saying stop rape on the night shift. I mean, it gave me chills as a journalist to see the name of our project being put up there. But, you know, they've really created an effort to address this and create this network of promotoras who are doing the self-defense classes and educating other women janitors, but also a male counterpart to this, a compadres network, where men are meeting together and talking about what they can do to be better allies, what they can do to be eyes and ears in the workplace and try to put a stop to this.
As you said, this is not something that many people talked about, but when you stop and think about what women janitors are walking into, these high-rise buildings, maybe not high-rise, after hours, it's dark, there aren't many people there. What has changed for them when they go to work at, say, 8 o'clock at night because of all of this?
Well, there will be some changes that are phasing in because of the bill that Lorena Gonzalez pushed through. And it doesn't only require sexual harassment training for supervisors. It requires sexual harassment training for all employees. So that's a very big shift. And if companies don't comply with that mandate, they can't do business in California. I mean, that's a pretty big hammer. And it also, and this is really important because in all of these low-wage industries, there's a lot of subcontracting. A lot of fly-by-night companies where it's really hard to point a finger and to get accountability. So this law requires that California create a registry of janitorial companies so that we can keep track of who of all these employers are. In a number of the cases that we followed, if there was an incident, if a woman did get to the point where she was making a complaint or filing a lawsuit, they could just close up shop, open up under a new name. You know, so there was a real lack of accountability. So I think that changes things. And the fact that the janitors union has been able to incorporate sexual harassment into their union contracts for those workers that are unionized, I think we'll be able to see some changes. But many janitors, as in many other low-wage sectors, do not have union protections.
And in some cases, even if women do have union protections, like the women working at this Ford plant, they're still not seeing changes. Linda Burnham, what about house cleaners, nannies, and elder caregivers? I mean, we're talking about women who do have union protections and how difficult it is for them to see sweeping changes. What about house cleaners and elder caregivers?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, I think one of the issues that Monica was speaking about earlier is that domestic workers and farm workers were carved out of a whole range of labor protections, and so we're including the right to organize, and so we are catching up. and there are particular ways in which the domestic work industry kind of reinforces isolation. So for mm-hmm. us, and part of that is that you're working behind closed doors in a private home with employers who could be wonderful and understanding of your rights and pay well, but who also could be abusive and highly exploitative. And then add to that the fact that because of the nation's immigration policies and because we don't have a path to citizenship for folks who have been in this country and contributing to the economy of the country for years and decades, because we have not found a way to implement those policies at a national level, many of our workers are also undocumented. And so they contribute to the economy, but face the vulnerability of being female in a workplace, being in a workplace behind closed doors, and in at least some cases, being workers without documents. Mm. So all of these contribute to the vulnerability of the workforce. And what we talk about at National Domestic Workers Alliance is working for a shift from invisibility, from behind closed doors, so from invisibility to power, and really encouraging the kinds of strength and courage it takes for workers to step into that power, from isolation to connection in the kinds of organizations here in the Bay Area, for example, Mujeres Unidas y Activas and La Colectiva de Mujeres, which create connection for workers to break through that kind of isolation they face day to day, and from silence to a powerful voice. So I think in part what this moment speaks to is the fact that we need both long-term, long-range culture shift measures. So, for example, you know, at some point we figured out that we need sex education in the schools. Well, clearly sex education is not enough, and we need some way to do early and ongoing intervention with boys in particular about predatory sexuality. Mm. Predatory sexuality is a thing. That's what, I mean, that's what this moment is about. It's a thing overwhelmingly on the male side of our species, and we need the kind of ongoing educational and cultural work that addresses predatory sexuality so that it's not just about what are the laws and policies, but also about how do we start to think about and mold behavior so that we start to kind of lessen the incidence. And then we also need ways in which people who are working in the informal economy is a thing, mm-hmm. that people in the informal economy can lodge a complaint, right. Can say, this is what's happening to me on the job, and that complaint can be heard and believed. Domestic workers don't have a human resources department. We've understood through this movement that human resource departments are oftentimes not all that they should be, right. but it is at least supposed to be a way to lodge a complaint and get results. Domestic workers obviously don't have that. So I want to also say that to direct your listeners to domesticworkers.org and domesticemployers.org, where they'll find more information about what domestic worker organizing is all about, and also about what it means, assuming that some of your listeners may also employ domestic workers, what it means that when your home is a workplace, and what it means to ensure that you have a fair workplace, even if you're a fair employer. Do you know for sure that your adult children are not harassing a house cleaner? We have stories about that. Are you sure that visitors to your home are not harassing a domestic worker who is your employee? So So I want to direct your listeners to those two resources to do some serious thinking about what it means to employ domestic workers, and for domestic workers who may be listening, to go to domesticworker.org to find organizations in your city or state that whose whole intention is to break the isolation and to help domestic workers come into their power.
It's also important to note that domestic workers do not have benefits. They don't have retirement. A friend of mine, her mother was taking care of an older man for the last 10 years, 24/7 care. The family had a lot of money, but they paid her $500 a week for 10 years, never gave her a raise. It was a good environment. She really, really liked the man she was taking care of. He passed away, and the family completely cut her off.
Yeah.
So how do I mean?
Well, I think just to say, I think one of the phenomena, we've just completed a study in South Texas in the border, in the border region, interviewed more than 500 domestic workers, and domestic workers themselves were their surveyors. And I think one of the things that comes through so powerfully is that women devote their lives to families, to children, to mm-hmm. elders, to elders who need incredible amounts of care. And they come to the work both with skill and with depths of caring and in many cases, love. You know, there are aspects of this work, if you're caring for a little one or an elder, that you really can't do without engaging emotionally.
Right.
It is emotional work, and without deep caring. And so often that is not recognized and very poorly compensated. Workers work into old age because, as you say, there are no resources, there are no pensions, there's no 401k, and usually there are no savings because the pay is so low. So the work, we say that domestic work makes all other work possible, whether paid domestic work or unpaid domestic work, taking care of the home and taking care of those who need care. Is what makes it possible for the rest of us to go out and work in other ways. And what we're about is lifting that up and bringing that to the consciousness of people so that they value this work and give it the dignity it deserves.
We've been talking in this show about needing so many things, the cultural shift, the legislation, the organizing, the microphone, that's very important. Linda, can you talk about the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights? There have been many success stories across the country, but what really makes a difference?
Well, the Domestic Worker Bill of Rights campaigns, and we've won 7 of them, I think, now. I'm not going to remember all of the states, but California is one of them, Massachusetts, New York, Hawaii, Illinois, and this is where, you know, kind of the rubber meets the road. So what it takes to get a Bill of Rights passed is convincing legislators that this is real work, that it's work that deserves to be well paid, and knocking on the doors, bringing the stories. And we're really proud of the work that we've done in passing bills of rights. The background to this is that, as I said, farm workers and domestic workers were carved out of all of the labor protections and rights to organize that workers gained in the 1930s. And they were carved out for a reason, you know, complicated racial politics, of course. It was opposed by Southern legislators, basically because these workforces were brown and black and they didn't want them to be well paid or to organize. So that legacy has carried into the 21st century. And so in order to gain the kinds of labor protections that other workers already have, we've had to go state by state. Bring the stories of this workforce, and domestic workers themselves have gotten on buses and gone to Sacramento and to Albany and to Springfield multiple times, getting up early in the morning, giving up a day's work to get these passed and to gain rights to overtime and to rest breaks and to meal breaks that they simply would not have. And now our challenge is to make sure that those rights are actually enforced, and that's what we're working on now.
Linda Burnham is Senior Advisor at the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and Sasha Coca is the host of KQED's The California Report magazine. She worked on the documentaries Rape in the Fields and Rape on the Night Shift. I hope you can see these. Rape on the Night Shift will air again on Frontline Tuesday at 7 o'clock with updates. You can also listen to Reveal in KQED next week for updates. We have time for one caller before we end. Let's go to Dinah in Berkeley. Hi, Dinah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So my comment, which every time I heard you guys reference that training is called sexual harassment training, it started to bother me more and more. Because if the goal is honoring boundaries, and namely here sexual boundaries, and there can be another way of terming that, when we call it sexual harassment training, aren't we going to get more of the same in some capacity, even though there will be people who are awakened to, you know, their behavior being just completely inexcusable? And so that's my comment. It's, let's all awaken to the power of language and how we speak and create terms, and then the impact on our relationships, communities, and the world of how we language our terms, our goals, and our intentions.
You know, I think there is some concern and has been that this kind of training, whatever you want to call it, is just sort of perfunctory. Right. You know, you come in, you sign a paper saying, yeah, I've been trained in how not to talk to people, or, you know, ways I should not touch people. Or in some cases, you sign the paper even if you haven't gotten the training, which is what we found from a number of janitors. But whatever you call it, you know, I think what's important is that it's actually addressing power dynamics, and that it leads to a cultural shift, and that it's effective. So in the case of the new bill for janitors here in California, the women themselves who've been involved in this Yeah Basta coalition have a voice in shaping that training, and in fact want to get very involved. So the ideal scenario in their minds would be that actually women janitors are bringing this empowerment training that they're doing through the self-defense and helping to shape that curriculum, and that it's not just here a couple slides and sign a paper, 2 hours, you're done.
So the women actually think this is going to make a difference.
If the training is done effectively and addresses the power dynamics that the caller is talking about. Hmm. And, you know, maybe there could be a model where some of these promotoras are actually involved in doing the training for their own colleagues.
Well, thank you, Dinah. You're right. Language is very important. Thanks for that call. We have just a couple minutes left. Sasha, you worked on Rape in the Fields and Rape on the Night Shift. Both can be seen online, heard online also. Rape on the Night Shift will be re-aired Tuesday, 7 o'clock on Frontline. What are you planning to report on this year on these issues? Because there are so many angles, the organizing, the cultural shifts, just raising awareness about what these women, their everyday lives, what benefits they do or don't have, what protections they do or don't have, and then the difficulty of getting solid legislation passed that actually will make a difference.
That's right. And, you know, we are going to continue to follow the organizing among these janitors. This is just starting to really blossom, I think, and spread out from the original group who did the hunger strike. Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez has already introduced a new bill this year that would help increased protections for people who do come forward, workers who do come forward. And, you know, she really sees this as an opportune moment to kind of put more teeth into the bill that she originally introduced last year, now that there is so much awareness in the Capitol about this.
The Capitol's having a hearing on sexual harassment today.
That's right.
Sexual harassment in Sacramento.
Within Sacramento, right? But the fact that legislators have woken up to this within their own culture, she's hoping she could put more teeth into it. And in fact, not just hold the janitorial companies accountable, but actually the building owners, the tenants who occupy the buildings that are being cleaned. So, you know, we're going to continue to follow that. We're going to continue to see how this Time's Up and Me Too movement actually works. Are women accessing this legal defense fund through Time's Up? Is it available in a way that women who are worried about deportation can access it? Non-English speaking can access it. So I think there's a lot more work to be done.
Linda, what are your plans for 2018? And the question that you raised earlier is so important. How do you sustain this movement?
Well, you know, I've been working around women's issues for a very long time, and this it does feel like an inflection point to me, in the sense that the kind of breadth that this movement has taken. So and even though you can already see kind of minor signs of backlash, I'm really optimistic about folks making sure that this energy is starts to make a difference. So we're going to be releasing the report about Texas. Women in Texas, included in that report is the information about women who are working in people's homes who experience sexual harassment and sexual assault. We'll be working with our affiliates across the country, cities and states across the country, over 60 affiliates, to be in conversation with them about how they're working with their members in this new environment, and how they're making sure that members, domestic workers, are transforming this energy into opportunities to bring other women into the work.
Well, Linda, we're out of time, but I would love to do an entire show specifically on janitors and then another one specifically on domestic workers. Linda Burnham is senior advisor at the National Domestic Workers Alliance. Sasha Coca is the host of KQED's The California Report magazine. Be sure to catch Rape on the Night Shift, Frontline, Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Thank you both for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Thank you for joining us.